వక్రతుండ మహాకాయ సూర్యకోటి సభప్రభ నిర్విఘ్నం కురు మే దేవ సర్వకార్యషు సర్వదా. శివశక్త్యాయుక్తో యది భవతి శక్తః ప్రభవితుం న చేదేవం దేవో న ఖలు కుశలః స్పందితుమపి. అథ స్వామారాధ్యా హరిహర విరించాదిభిరపి ప్రణంతుం స్తోతుం వా కతమకృత పుణ్యః ప్రభవతి.
Shri Sai Ram. At the outset, my most loving and prayerful salutations at the divine lotus feet of our most beloved Bhagwan, Shri Satya Sai Baba. Dear listener, you are tuned to Radio Sai Global Harmony on Asia Stream, bringing you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, the love and the message of Bhagwan, Shri Satya Sai Baba. Good morning. Greetings and loving Sai Ram on this Thursday on the 21st of May 2020, and with me Team Radio Sai Sunil welcoming you to this morning's segment Divine Glory on Thursday Live from Prashanthi Nilayam. Let me first read out to you today's Sai Inspires message. Is it sufficient to continue to listen and enjoy discourses through Radio Sai, online satsangs and many such forms? Bhagwan points out to us the subsequent steps that needs to be taken, and I quote, "These days, listening to lectures and discourses has become just an itch, a craze. After hearing them once, people imagine they have known all. Don't just listen, but practice and experience. Do not rest content with merely listening to advice. What you have listened to must later be reflected upon, and what has thus been imprinted on the mind has later to be experienced and expressed in thought, word and deed. Only thus can the truth be a treasure in the heart. Only then can it flow through the veins and manifest in full splendor through you. The real purpose of the search for truth is to liberate oneself. The yearning must be deep and persistent. The longing to know and experience the truth will then become a yoga, a process of union." Unquote. This was taken from Vidya Vahini, Chapter 9. Dear listener, today as we are continuing with lockdowns and social distancing due to spread of the coronavirus disease, let us all take all the precautions mandated by the government and the health department, and also maintain personal and community hygiene. And also let us continue to engage in prayers at our own places for world peace. Let me now play for you a very powerful mantra or a verse. And the efficacy of this mantra is in destroying all the harmful germs and viruses. And this verse is from Krishna Yajurveda Taittiriya Aranyaka. The meaning of this, just to give you a gist of the meaning of this verse, and I read it, O germ, I kill you with this mantra revealed by Rishis Atri, Kanva and Jamadagni. Through this mantra, the leader of the germs is killed. The rest of the leaders of the germ clan, the rest of the leaders of the germ clan will also be similarly killed. The mother and father of the germs are also destroyed. All types of germs, whether big or small, black or white, are also killed. The germs lying in the bodies of animals are killed. We offer havis during homas at the Yagashala for our protection. Likewise, this mantra keeps all germ enemies stuck in Yama's teeth. The crushing sound of them being killed in his mouth can be heard. Om, peace, peace, peace. Let me now play for you the mantra.
Om Atrinatva Krime Hanmi Kanvena Jamadagnina Vishvavaso Brahmana Hataha Krimina Gumraja Apyesha Vristapatir Hataha Atho Mata Atho Pita Atho Sthura Atho Kshudra Atho Krishna Atho Shveta Atho Ashatika Hata Shveta Bhissaha Sarve Hata Ahara Vadya Shrutasya Havisho Yata Tat Satyam Yadamuyamasya Jambhayo Adadhami Tadahitate Khanthan Rasi Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
That was the mantra, and this is daily chanted in Prashanti Nilayam both in the morning and evening prayer sessions. Please log on to Radio Sai YouTube Prashanti Mandir YouTube channel for our daily live streaming from in the morning and evening. Also Radio Sai Asia stream and Telugu stream. Also on our Facebook page, Sri Satya Sai Baba Facebook page, for morning and evening prayer sessions live from the Sai Kulwant Hall here at Prashanti Nilayam. The time right now in our studios is 52 minutes past 9 a.m. that is Indian Standard Time. And today in Divine Glory, I've lined up for you readings from the English version of the holy book, Sri Sai Satcharitra by Sri Hema Pant, followed by a special program on Sai Gita, Swami's pet elephant devotee, that was presented in the Sai Kulwant Hall way back in the year 2014. And it was on 22nd of May 2007 that Sai Gita, Swami's pet elephant devotee, attained his lotus feet. And in memory of that, I'll be playing a special program. But first, readings from Sri Sai Satcharitra. Sri Sai Satcharitra is an account on the life and teachings of Sai Baba of Shirdi, written by Sri Hema Pant. We are thankful to Vasanti Sundaram for reading out the contents from this holy book and to Veeramani Kannan for the melodious musical support. Wishing you all a happy and holy and a blessed Thursday and a wonderful day ahead. Praying to Lord Almighty that the pandemic caused by the coronavirus disease be eradicated and all suffering come to an end at the earliest. Samasta lokaha sukino bhavantu.
The Ramdasi returned soon with the Sena pods. Anna Chichanikar, who was then present and wanted to play the part of Narad, who was also well known for setting up confrontations between gods and demons, informed him of what had happened. The Ramdasi at once flared up. He came down at once on Shama with full fury. He said it was Shama who said Baba to send him away under the pretext of stomachache for bringing the medicine, and thus took away the book. He began to scold and abuse Shama and remarked that if the book was not returned, he would dash his head. Shama calmly remonstrated with him, but in vain. Then Baba spoke kindly to him as follows. O Ramdasi, what is the matter with you? Why are you so turbulent? Is not Shama a boy? Why do you scold him unnecessarily? How is it that you are so quarrelsome? Can you not speak soft and tender words? You read these sacred books daily, and still your mind is agitated and your passions uncontrolled. What sort of a Ramdasi are you? You ought to be indifferent to all things. Is it not strange that you should possess this book so strongly? A true Ramdasi should have no mamta, but have samta towards all. You are now quarrelling with Shama for a mere book? Go, take a seat. Books can be had in plenty with money, but not men. Think well and be considerate. What worth is your book? Shama had no concern with it. I took it myself and gave it to him. You know it by heart. I thought Shama might read it and benefit from it, so I gave it to him. How sweet were these words of Baba, soft, tender and nectar-like. Their effect was wonderful. The Ramdasi calmed down and said to Shama that he would take Panchratni Gita in return. Shama was much pleased and said, "Why one? I shall give you 10 copies in return." So the matter was ultimately settled. The question for consideration is, why should the Ramdasi press for Panchratni Gita, a book for which he never cared to know? And why should he, who daily read religious books in the masjid in front of Baba, quarrel with Shama before him? We do not know how to apportion the blame and whom to blame. We only say that, had this incident not happened, the importance of the subject, the efficacy of God's name, and the significance of Vishnu Sahasranam would not have been brought home to Shama. So we see that Baba's method of teaching and initiating was unique. In this case, Shama did gradually study the book and mastered its contents to such an extent that he was able to explain it to Professor G.G. Narke of the College of Engineering, Pune, the son-in-law of Sriman Bhuti and a devotee of Baba. Vitthal Vision. One day, while Kaka Sahib Dikshit was in meditation, after his morning bath in his vada at Shirdi, he saw a vision of Vitthal. When he went to see Baba later, Baba asked him, "Did Vitthal Patil come? Did you not see him? He is very elusive. Hold him fast, otherwise he'll give you the slip and run away." Then at noon, a certain hawker came there with 20 or 25 pictures of Vitthal of Pandharpur for sale. Mr. Dikshit was surprised to see that the form of Vitthal he saw in his meditation exactly matched with that in the picture, and he was also reminded of Baba's words. He therefore bought one picture most willingly and kept it in his shrine for worship. Gita Rahasya. Baba always loved those who studied Brahma Vidya and encouraged them. To give an instance, once Papu Sahib Jog received a post parcel. It contained a copy of Gita Rahasya by Lokmanya Tilak. Taking it under his armpit, he came to the masjid and prostrated before Baba when the parcel fell at Baba's feet. Baba inquired what it was. It was opened then and there, and the book was placed in Baba's hand. He turned some pages here and there for a few minutes and took out a rupee from his pocket, placed it on the book, and handed the same with the rupee to Jog and said to him, "Read this completely and you will be benefited." Mr. and Mrs. Karpade. Let us close this chapter with a description of the Karpades. Once, Dada Sahib Karpade came with his family and lived in Shirdi for some months. Dada Sahib was not an ordinary man. He was the affluent and most famous advocate of Amravati and was a member of the Council of State in New Delhi. He was intelligent and a very good speaker. Still, he dared not open his mouth before Baba. Most devotees spoke and argued with Baba off and on, but only three, Karpade, Noorkar and Bhuti, kept always silent. They were meek, modest, humble and good-natured. Dada Sahib who was able to expound Panchadashi, a well-known Sanskrit treatise on the Advaita philosophy by the famous Vidyaranya. He uttered no word when he came to the masjid before Baba. A man, however learned he may be even in Vedas, fades away before one who has realized Brahma and becomes one with it. Learning cannot stand before self-realization. Dada Sahib stayed for 4 months, but Mrs. Karpade stayed for 7. Both were highly pleased with their Shirdi stay. Mrs. Karpade was faithful and devout and loved Baba deeply. Every noon she brought Naivedya herself to the masjid, and after it was accepted by Baba, she used to return and take her meals. On seeing her steady and firm devotion, Baba wanted to exhibit it to others. One noon, she brought a dish containing sansa or wheat pudding. She also brought puris, rice, soup and kheer and other articles to the masjid. Baba, who usually waited for hours, got up at once, went up to his seat and, removing the cover from the dish, began to partake of the things zealously. Shama then asked him, "Why this partiality? At times you throw away dishes of others and do not care to look at them, but this appeals to you earnestly. Why? Is the dish brought by this lady so sweet? This intrigues us." Baba then explained, "This food is really extraordinary. In former birth, this lady was a merchant's fat cow yielding much milk. Then she disappeared and took birth in a gardener's family and then in a Kshatriya family and married a merchant. She was born later in a Brahmin family. I saw her after a very long time. Let me take some sweet morsels of love from her dish." After saying this, Baba did full justice to her dish, washed his mouth and hands and belched out as if he was fully satisfied. He then resumed his seat. Then she bowed down and began to shampoo Baba's legs, and he began to talk with her and knead her arms, which were shampooing his legs. On seeing this reciprocal service, Shama began to joke and said, "Ah, it is going on well, a wonderful sight to see God and his bhaktas serving each other." After being pleased with her sincere service, Baba asked her in low and fascinating tone to chant Raja Ram, Raja Ram, always, and said, "If you do this, your life's object will be achieved. Your mind will attain peace, and you will be immensely benefited." To persons unfamiliar with spiritual matters, this might appear as a polite gesture, but really it was not so. It was a case of what is technically called Shaktipat, that is, transference of power from the guru to the disciple. How effective were Baba's words? In an instant they pierced her heart and remained there. This case illustrates the nature of the relations that should subsist between the guru and the disciple. Both should love and serve each other as one. There is no distinction nor any difference between them. Both are one, and one cannot live without the other. The disciple placing his hand at the guru's feet is a gross or outward vision. Really and internally, they are both one and the same. Those who see any difference between them are yet unripe and not perfect. Bow to Sri Sai. Peace be to all. Chapter 28. Sparrows Driven to Shirdi. Lakshmi Chand, Barhanpur Lady, Megha. Preliminary. Sai is not finite or limited. He dwells in all beings, from ants and insects to the god Brahma. He pervades all. Sai was well versed in the knowledge of the Vedas as well as in the science of self-realization. As he was proficient in both these, he was well fitted to be the Sadguru. Anyone, though learned but not able to awaken the disciples and establish them in self-realization, does not deserve to be called a Sadguru. Generally, the worldly parents give birth to the body, but death invariably follows life. But Sadguru does away with both life and death, and so he is more kind and merciful than anybody else. Sai Baba often said that, "Let his man be at any distance, 1,000 kos away from him, he will be drawn to Shirdi like a sparrow with a thread tied to his feet." This chapter describes the stories of three such sparrows. Lala Lakshmi Chand. This gentleman was first serving in the Sri Venkateshwar Press in Mumbai, then in the Railway Department, and later in the firm of Messrs. Raleigh Brothers and Company as a Munshi. He got the contact of Baba in 1910. 1 or 2 months before Christmas, he saw in his dream at Santa Cruz an old man with a beard, standing and surrounded by his bhaktas. A few days later, he went to the house of his friend, Mr. Dattatreya Manjunath Bijur, to hear the kirtan by Das Ganu. It was, and is, always a practice of Das Ganu to keep Baba's picture in front of the audience while doing the kirtan. Lakshmi Chand was surprised to see that the features of the old man he saw in his dream tallied exactly with those in the picture, and thus he came to the conclusion that the old man he saw in his dreams was Sai Baba himself. The sight of this picture, Das Ganu's kirtan, and the life of the Saint Tukaram on which Das Ganu discoursed, all these things made a deep impression on his mind, and he decided to go to Shirdi. It is always the experience of the bhaktas that God always helps them in their search for Sadguru and other spiritual endeavors. That very night, a friend named Shankar Rao knocked at his door and asked him whether he would accompany him to Shirdi. His joy knew no bounds, and he at once decided to go to Shirdi and borrowed 15 rupees from his cousin. After making due preparations, he left for Shirdi. In the train, he and his friend Shankar Rao did some bhajan and inquired about Sai Baba with some fellow passengers who were 4 Muslims returning to their place near Shirdi. They all told them that Sai Baba was a great saint living in Shirdi for many years. When they reached Kopargaon, he wanted to buy some good guavas for offering to Baba, but he was so much enwrapped with the scenery and sights there that he forgot to purchase them. When they were nearing Shirdi, he was reminded of the guavas. Just then, he saw an old woman with a guava basket on her head running after the tonga. The tonga was stopped, and he gladly purchased some fruits when the woman said, "Take all the rest and offer them on my behalf to Baba." The facts that he had intended to purchase guavas but had forgotten to do so, the old woman's encounter and her devotion to Baba, all these were a pleasant surprise to both the friends, and Lakshmi Chand thought in his mind that the old woman might be some relation of the old man he saw in his dream. Then they drove on and came near Shirdi, and on seeing flags on the masjid, they saluted them. With puja materials in hand, they went to the masjid and worshipped Baba with due formality. Lakshmi Chand was much moved and was extremely happy to see Baba. He was enwrapped with Baba's feet as a bee with a sweet-smelling lotus. Then Baba spoke as follows. Cunning fellow, he does bhajan on the way and inquiries from others. Why ask others? Everything we should see with our own eyes. Where is the necessity to question others? Just think for yourself whether your dream is true or not. Where was the necessity of the darshan by taking a loan from a Marwari? Is the heart's desire now satisfied? Hearing these words, Lakshmi Chand was wonderstruck at Baba's omniscience. He was at a loss to know how Baba came to know about all the things that had happened en route from his house to Shirdi. The chief thing to note in this respect is that Baba never liked people to borrow or take loan for his darshan or celebrating any holiday or making any pilgrimage. Sanza. At noon, when Lakshmi Chand was sitting for meals, he got some sanza from a devotee as prasad. He was pleased to have it. Next day also he expected it, but got nothing. So he was anxious to get it again. Then on the third day at the noon arati time, Bapu Saheb Jog asked Baba what naivedya he should bring. Baba told him to bring sanza or wheat pudding. Then the bhaktas brought 2 big potfuls of sanza. Lakshmi Chand was very hungry and there was some pain in his back. Then Baba said to him, "It is good that you are hungry. Take sanza and some medicine for the pain in the back." Lakshmi Chand was again wonderstruck to see that Baba again read his mind and spoke out what was passing in. How omniscient was he! evil eye. During this visit, Lakshmi Chand also witnessed one night the procession of the Chavadi. Baba then suffered much from cough. He thought the suffering of Baba might be due to somebody's evil eye. Next morning, when he went to the masjid, Baba spoke to Shama as follows. I suffered last night from cough. Is it due to some evil eye? I think that somebody's evil eye has worked on me and so I am suffering. In this case, Baba spoke out what was passing in Lakshmi Chand's mind. On seeing these proofs of Baba's omniscience and kindness to his bhaktas, Lakshmi Chand fell prostrate at Baba's feet and said, I am much blessed with your darshan. Ever be kind and merciful to me and protect me always. There is no God to me in this world except you. Let my mind be ever wrapped in your bhajan and feet. Let your grace protect me from the miseries of the world and let me ever chant your name and be happy. After getting Baba's udi and blessing, he returned home with his friends, much pleased and contented, and was singing Baba's glory on the way. He remained a staunch devotee of Baba later and always sent garlands of flowers, camphor and dakshina with any person of his acquaintance bound for Shirdi. Barhanpur Lady. Now, let us turn to another sparrow. One lady in Barhanpur saw in her dream Sai Baba coming to her door and begging khichdi. On waking up, she saw nobody at her door. However, she was pleased with the vision and told it to all, including her husband. He was employed in the postal department, and when he was transferred to Akola, both husband and wife, who were devout persons, decided to go to Shirdi. Then on a suitable day, they left for Shirdi, and after visiting Gomati Tirth, on the way, they reached Shirdi and stayed there for 2 months. Every day they went to the masjid, performed Baba's worship and passed their time happily. The couple came to Shirdi to offer khichdi as naivedya, but for the first 14 days, somehow or the other, it could not be offered. The lady did not like this delay or tardiness. Then, on the 15th day, she came at noon to the masjid with her khichdi. There she found that Baba and the others were already sitting for meals and that the curtain was down. Nobody dared enter in when the curtain was down, but the lady could not wait. She lifted up the curtain and entered. Strange to say, Baba seemed that day hungry for khichdi and wanted it first. And when the lady came in with the dish, Baba was delighted and began to eat morsel after morsel of khichdi. On seeing the earnestness of Baba in this respect, everybody was wonderstruck, and those who heard the story of khichdi were convinced about his extraordinary love for his devotees. The third sparrow, Megha. Now let us go to the third sparrow. Megha of Viramgaon was a simple and illiterate Brahmin cook of Rav Bahadur Sate. He was a devotee of Shiva and always chanted the 5-syllabled mantra Namah Shivai. He did not know the Sandhya nor its chief mantra, the Gayatri. Rav Bahadur Sate was interested in him, taught him the Sandhya and the Gayatri. Sate told him that Sai Baba of Shirdi was the embodied form of the god Shiva and made him start for Shirdi. At the Broach railway station, he learned that Sai Baba was a Muslim, and his simple and orthodox mind was much perturbed at the prospect of bowing down to a Muslim, and he prayed to his master not to send him there. His master, however, insisted on his going there and gave him a letter of introduction to his father-in-law, Ganesh Damodar, alias Dada Kelkar at Shirdi, to introduce him to Sai Baba. When he reached Shirdi and went to the masjid, Baba was very indignant and would not allow him to enter. Kick out the rascal, roared Baba, and then said to Megha, you are a high caste Brahmin and I am a low Muslim. You will lose your caste by coming here. Just get away. On hearing these words, Megha began to tremble. He was wondering as to how Baba had come to know what was passing in his mind. He stayed there for some days, serving Baba in his own way, but was not convinced. Then he went home, and then to Trayambak, and stayed there for a year and a half. Then again he returned to Shirdi. This time, at the intercession of Dada Kelkar, he was allowed to enter the masjid and stay in Shirdi. Sai Baba's help to Megha was not through any oral instruction. He worked upon Megha internally with the result that he was considerably changed and benefited. Then Megha began to look upon Sai Baba as an incarnation of Shiva. In order to worship Shiva, bay leaves are required, and Megha used to go miles and miles every day to bring them and worship his Shiva, which was Baba. His practice was to worship all the deities in the village and then come to the masjid, and after saluting Baba's gaddi, he worshipped Baba, and after doing some service, drank the washings of Baba's feet. Once it so happened that he came to the masjid without worshipping Khandoba, as the door of the temple was closed. Baba did not accept his worship and sent him again, saying that the door was open then. Megha went, found the door open, worshipped the deity, and then returned to Baba as usual. Ganges Bath. On one Makar Sankranti day, Megha wanted to smear the body of Baba with sandal paste and bathe him with Ganga water. Baba was first unwilling to undergo this, but at his repeated requests, he consented. Megha had to travel a distance of 8 kos to bring the sacred water from the Gomati River. He brought the water, made all preparations for the bath at noon, and asked Baba to get ready for the same. Then Baba again asked him to be spared from this bath ritual, saying that as a fakir, he had nothing to do with the Ganges water. But Megha did not listen to him. He knew that Shiva is pleased with Abhishek on that auspicious day. Baba then consented, came down and sat on a wooden board, and projecting his head said, "O Megha, do at least this favor. Head is the most important organ of the body, so pour the water over that only. It is equivalent to the whole bath." Megha said, "All right," and lifting the water pot, began to pour it on the head. But in doing so, he was much overwhelmed with love that he cried out, "Har Har Ganga," and emptied the pot on the whole body. He kept the pot aside and began to look at Baba. But to his surprise and amazement, he found that only Baba's head was drenched, while the rest of the body was quite dry. Trident and Pindi. Megha worshipped Baba at two places. In the masjid, he worshipped Baba in person, and in the wada, Baba's big picture given by Nana Sahib Chandorkar. This he did for 12 months. Then, in order to appreciate his devotion and confirm his faith, Baba gave him a vision. One morning, when Megha was lying down on his bed with eyes closed but internally awake, he saw clearly Baba's form. Baba, knowing him to be awake, threw Akshata and said, "Megha, draw a trident," and then he disappeared. Hearing Baba's words, he eagerly opened his eyes, saw no Baba there, but only rice grains spread here and there. He then went to Baba, told him about the vision, and asked permission to draw trident. Baba said, "Did you not hear my words asking you to draw trident? It was no vision but direct order. My words are always pregnant with meaning and never hollow." Megha said, "I thought you woke me up, but all the doors were closed, so I doubted and thought it to be a vision." Baba rejoined, "I require no door to enter. I have no form. I always live everywhere. As a wire puller, I carry on all the actions of the man who trusts me and merges in me." Megha returned to the wada and drew a red trident on the wall near Baba's picture. Next day, a Ramdasi Bhakt came from Pune, saluted Baba and offered him pindi. At this time, Megha also turned up there. Baba said to him, "See, Shankar has come. Protect him now." Megha was pleasantly surprised to see pindi. Also in the wada, Kaka Sahib Dikshit was standing with a towel on his head after having taken his bath and was remembering Sai when he saw a pindi before his mental vision. While he was wondering about this, Megha came and showed him the pindi presented to him by Baba. Dikshit was happy to know that this pindi exactly tallied with the one he saw a few minutes ago in his vision. In a few days after the drawing of the trident was complete, Baba installed the pindi near the big picture which Megha was worshipping. The worship of Shiva was dear to Megha, and by the drawing of the trident and the installation of the pindi, Baba confirmed his faith. After continuous service of Baba for many years, doing regular worship and aarti every noon and evening, Megha passed away in 1912. Then, Baba passed his hands over his mortal remains and said, "This was a true devotee of mine." Baba also ordered that at his own expense the funeral dinner should be given to the Brahmins, and this order was carried out by Kaka Saheb Dikshit. Bow to Sri Sai. Peace be to all.
Shri Sai Guruvar ki parama. Shri Sai Ram. We offer our loving and prayerful salutations at the lotus feet of our most beloved Bhagwan. Respected elders, dear brothers and sisters, today is a day of immense significance. It is a day of sweet remembrance. It is a day when we celebrate devotion. It is the day when we laud the Lord's compassion. It is the day when one of the most exemplar devotees of the Lord, who exemplified what devotion is, what undiluted, unsullied devotion is, the Lord's pet elephant, Sai Gita, merged at his lotus feet. In this month of May, 7 years ago, Swami was in Kodaikanal. On the 18th of May, Swami brought his Kodai trip to an abrupt halt and returned to Prashantinilayam. As he was driving in, he stopped on the road near Sai Gita's home. And that day, when the Lord saw Sai Gita, it was a look of concern. It was not the usual delightful dance of ecstasy which was always the scene when Sai Gita and Swami met. Sai Gita too was very subdued. On the 19th and 20th of May, Sai Gita did not take food. In fact, she had not been eating for the last 15 days. On the 21st, as Peddareddy Garu, her caretaker, was giving her a bath, as she tried to lift her foot, she collapsed, and she tried for the next 3-4 hours to get up, but in vain. In the evening, the message was sent to Bhagwan of this sad news that Sai Gita lay lifeless. After the evening bhajan, Swami sent Brother Satyajit with a bowl of payasam with instructions that it should be fed to Sai Gita. And Peddareddy Garu was absolutely bewildered. How do you feed payasam to a lifeless body? But following Swami's instructions, he just opened Sai Gita's mouth and placed the payasam and just sent a silent prayer to Bhagwan. On 22nd morning, Bhagwan was there at Sai Gita's home early, 6:37 he was there, and as he got out of his car, he went straight, called out, "Gita, Gita," and he poured a huge quantity of vibhuti onto her mouth, and he personally closed her eyes and said, "Gita, you want to go? Go happily." In the legends, we have heard of the story of Gajendra Moksha, but in the Kali Yuga avatar, this was the occasion when we saw Gajarani Moksha. Never before in the history of Satya Sai avatar have we ever come across an instance when Bhagwan was there at the funeral, not for 4 minutes or 10 minutes, but for 4 long hours. From 7 o'clock till 12:30, Bhagwan was there at the funeral. He was directing every little detail. He returned only at 12:30, and that is after he had again put vibhuti on the samadhi of Sai Gita. In fact, on that morning, 22nd, as Bhagwan was getting out of his car, he held on to Peddareddy Garu's hand, and in deep sorrow, he said, "We have lost a great devotee. I will never find a devotee like this again. I have lost a great devotee. I have lost a great devotee." This is what Bhagwan kept on saying. And this is the precise reason why we are observing this day. The Satya Sai Sai Gita Prema Katha needs to be told and retold, because it is not only inspiring, it is truly liberating.
The week following that, you know, it was the day when the university had opened, the fresh students had come in, and Bhagwan decided to bless all the students and teachers with a visit to the institute, where he would address the first moral class of the semester, of the year. And during the course of his discourse, Swami did refer to Sai Gita several times. But one of the most profound statements that Swami made was, as he was speaking about Sai Gita, Brother Bishu narrated as to how Swami had become emotional and sorrowful. Even that day, as Swami became emotional and sorrowful, he clarified so beautifully. He said, "When you see me like this, you think that Swami is sorrowful. This is not sorrow. This is Vatsalyam. And what is Vatsalyam? Vatsalyam is the love the mother feels towards a child. Sai Gita was truly Swami's daughter in that sense. And she has been his daughter since 1962. When as a little baby calf, you know, little calf, she came to Swami during a Khedda operation. A Khedda is a kind of activity that is done to trap elephants. Wild elephants are, you know, with drum beats, they are pushed towards pits which have been dug so that the elephants fall in it and get trapped, and then they are domesticated. All the kings of India used to do this in order to obtain domestic elephants. During one such Khedda operation in this state of Mysore in 1962, an unfortunate incident happened where a female elephant, on delivering a baby, died. And that baby was Sai Gita. She might have lost her mother, but she was not an orphan, for she got the greatest mother in the whole universe, our dear Swami. And Swami brought that little calf here to Prashanthi Nilayam. And you know what? All the babies suckle their thumbs. We don't know whether baby Satya, Swami, suckled his thumb, but Sai Geeta definitely suckled Swami's thumb, for he himself said in a discourse how he fed her honey to do the annaprasa. And then Sai Geeta was housed in a little shed right over here, and she would be the first one to have darshan every day. Early in the morning she would do pradakshina around the mandir and the devotees would follow her. She was an example for all the devotees, and Bhagwan would come for darshan from here and he would go straight to Sai Geeta. And to Sai Geeta he would feed her directly in the mouth, because she doesn't want to accept it in her trunk. And she prostrates to Swami, garlands him, and then only permits him to go for darshan. And you know what? Swami used to also grant interviews to Sai Geeta. Swami and Sai Geeta, only two of them in the interview room here. It went on for a few days. After that, Swami stopped granting interviews. Not because he was upset with Sai Geeta or he wanted to give her the cold treatment, but simply because even with both doors open, Sai Geeta would not fit into the interview room. So the venue of the interview shifted to her shed. And when she grew bigger, a new shed had to be made. And that shed was made straight down here, where today we see the Rama, Lakshmana, Sita statues. A tin shed was to be made and Swami was supervising all the details for that shed to be erected. Now the engineer who made this shed, he made a mistake unknowingly. What he did was, he built the entrance facing the east, this side. Now Sai Geeta had a wall on the south, so she could not see Swami when he comes for darshan. And that was when the gentle, calm, peaceful, serene Sai Geeta showed what is her might. We often hear Swami say that an elephant does not know its own strength. Sai Geeta knew her strength. She made everyone aware of her strength when within a few hours she raised down the entire shed to the dust. And when people thought that she is angry or something, Swami said it is not anger. She is just pining to have my darshan. She could not have my darshan, that is why she did this. And when the shed was built facing the south, facing Swami's darshan hall, Sai Geeta was back to her sweet, loving, calm self. That has been, this is just a brief, but that has been Sai Geeta's life. A life of pining incessantly for Swami and Swami alone.
With what we heard of how Sai Geeta came to Swami, we would not be wrong in thinking that she was just one lucky elephant, wasn't she? Of all the many who were orphaned, I think even now many get orphaned, but she got the opportunity to be picked up by Swami and to be brought up by Swami as her own daughter. Didn't she just get lucky? One of the greatest scientists of our times, Louis Pasteur, explaining serendipity in scientific inventions and discoveries, he says, "Fortune favors a trained mind." If I were to bring the same analysis in that relationship between a devotee and the Lord, I could say fortune favors the focused mind. Yes, she was blessed. Yes, she was showered with Swami's love. But the way she responded to that love, the way she responded to that motherly love of Swami with that focus, that is why we are standing here talking about her, because that is why she is a perfect example of a devotee for us all to emulate. Some of the students were sharing once, the students of the hostel had made a beautiful pond in the hostel for Swami. It was the occasion of the Krishna Janmashtami. And they had come and prayed to Swami that Swami should come and inaugurate that little pond with a few little fish and a small rock garden which was made there. Swami in all mercy conceded, and after the celebrations in the mandir, came to the hostel, spent some time in that garden with the boys who had worked hard to bring it up into some shape. After having interacted with the students, Swami came out. Just to give you a brief of the scene that day, 350, 400 boys in the hostel surrounding Swami. The entire main road filled with devotees eager to see Swami even as he would come out of the hostel. And right across the road on that shed, which we all knew as Sai Geeta's home for many years, was Sai Geeta waiting for a Lord. Swami stepped out of the hostel, stood at the entrance of the hostel, looked so lovingly towards that shed of Sai Geeta and said, "Geeta, Geeta." A call which even the boy in the fourth row behind wouldn't have heard. Swami just called out to her, "Geeta," and the next moment they found that the gate was flung open and this massive devotee of the Lord coming running towards Swami. And that's when they realize that even proportionally her devotion also was so large for Swami. Because her focus was so much on Swami, it is said that in the depths of silence you hear the voice of the Lord. Because she was constantly in that silence within, even the whisper of the Lord could be heard by her. And that focus is what we are celebrating today. And that focus of Sai Geeta is what has made her one of the best devotees we have come to know.
If a devotee feels for the Lord in every cell of his being and pines for the Lord in every thought, word and deed, then his mind and his will become one. And then the Lord too pines for the devotee, just as the devotee pines for the Lord. It was way back in the early 80s in Vrindavan. Swami used to stay in the old bungalow then. One night, perhaps it was late in the night, Sri Ram Brahmam, the then caretaker of the Vrindavan ashram, suddenly heard a noise coming from the outside. It was sort of a hissing sound, and when he looked out of his window into the dark, all he could see was the trunk moving about in the darkness. And not knowing what it was, and hearing the sound, he was frightened. And at the same instant, Swami suddenly walked into the room, and Sri Ram Brahmam blurted out, "Swami, something has come." Swami smiled, calmed him down and said, "No, don't worry, it is just Sai Geeta who has come." Sai Geeta had gone all the way to Vrindavan ashram in search of her Lord. Swami opened the door and then pacified her divine hunger, which is darshan, sparshan and sambhashan. And then, although it was late in the night, Swami waited and made sure all the arrangements were made for her to stay in the ashram, and only then retired into his room. Such was the devotion of Sai Geeta, and such was Swami's love for her. It is said that when a devotee has pure and unsullied love for the Lord, then the Lord goes out of his way to fulfill the needs of the devotee. On another occasion, when Sai Geeta was sick, Swami personally sent Sri Chiranjeevi Rao Garu, the then caretaker of Prashanti Nilayam Ashram, with Vibhuti and asked him to deliver it to her personally. Not only that, Swami would often inquire to him, "Is she fed with the sugarcane leaves?" Sai Geeta liked sugarcane leaves, and Swami too knew that. And sugarcane leaves were not very easily obtainable in Prashanti Nilayam those days. But Swami would say that, "See, she is an animal. She cannot express herself explicitly. It is our duty that we must give her what she wants, because she will not be able to express herself." That was the unique bond which Swami shared with Sai Geeta. Now, let us all remember our Divine Lord, who is love personified. For just as Sai Geeta always remembered Swami, what else are our mind and senses for, if not for remembering Him and basking in His glory?
నిచ్చినది ఎందుకో తెలుసా, అన్నియు చూచేటందులక కాదు కాదు దేవదేవుడైన కైలా దేవదేవుడై శివులను ఇచ్చినదెందుకో తెలుసా. శబ్దము
Bhagwan, in the first poem, elucidates why these eyes are given for. The eyes are given not merely for just seeing whatever we want. It is to have the glory and the grandeur of the divine darshan. Sai Gita is a beautiful example for this. Sai Gita had always yearned to have the darshan of the Lord. And whenever she saw Swami, the joy, the happiness that she expressed always reminded us that she followed whatever Swami had told.
Bhagwan, in the second poem, tells us the purpose of the ears. The ears are given to us not to hear all the unnecessary chatter and the gossip, but to hear the stories and the glory of the Lord. Sai Gita has always yearned and craved to hear sweet words of Swami and converse with Him.
The intellect, as Bhagwan says, is a gift of God, not to devise strategies how to earn wealth and amass wealth, but it is to understand and realize the purpose and the ultimate truth that this life is temporary and ephemeral. Sai Gita, all through her life, had only focused and had her aim as Swami, Bhagwan. She always pined for Bhagwan's darshan and basked always in His divine love.
In this way, she rose to the level of a true devotee.
Indeed, Sai Gita is a role model for all humans to emulate.
Sai Ram.
Jai Sai Ram.
One of the most revealing and eye-opening events in the life of Sai Gita happened sometime in the late 80s. Some of the government forest officials and elders of the ashram suggested to Swami that Sai Gita has now come of age and it is time she is sent to the jungle because this is the period of her life when she should breed, otherwise she could get aggressive. Swami was not convinced with this notion, but reluctantly he agreed, and Sai Gita was thus sent to the Mudumalai forest, a 13-day long journey with two caretakers. And these two mahouts later informed Bhagwan how Sai Gita, once in the forest, never allowed any elephant to come near her, let alone looking at any male elephant and thinking of him as her companion. They tried to surround her with elephant calves so that will probably interest her in creating a family. But she would wait for the moment when the mouths are not watching and quietly push those elephant calves away. The most amazing thing is, in the nights, Sai Gita would break the chains and would start walking to Puttaparthi. When the mouse would not find her in the morning, they would go looking for her, following her footsteps, and they would find her 5 or 6 kilometers away. She would be walking on the road to Puttaparthi. And this happened every other night. 3 months of such ordeal for Sai Gita. And finally the mouse communicated to Bhagwan, "Swami, Sai Gita is not interested in anything else. Please permit us to come back to Prashantinilayam." And Swami acceded to their request. And finally, she was happy that she was back in Prashantinilayam. But the story does not end there. In fact, the drama begins now. A veterinary doctor checked Sai Gita and he pronounced, "Sai Gita is pregnant." And the ashram was abuzz with excitement. "Finally, Sai Gita is going to become a mother. We are going to have a baby elephant," and so on. And Swami added spice to the drama by saying, "Oh, we must have a fence around Sai Gita's shed because she needs additional privacy now." Then one day Swami took Professor Kasturi along with him and went to the Sai Gita's shed and told Professor Kasturi, "Kasturi, can you see Sai Gita? In Sai Gita's stomach there's a baby rolling. Can you see?" And the ideal obedient devotee that Professor Kasturi was, he simply nodded in affirmation. And the veterinary doctor then had the countdown. 4 weeks now, 3 weeks now, 2 weeks, and Sai Gita is going to become a mother. 1 week, 7 days, 4 days, 3 days. And everybody is waiting. What is going to happen now? The moment, whole Prashanti was waiting. And the veterinary doctor finally comes out and puts on a long face and says, "I'm sorry, Sai Gita is not pregnant." Swami must have had a hearty laugh. He allowed this whole drama to happen. But what is most significant is what Bhagwan said after this event. Swami said, "Sai Gita is a Shuddha Brahmacharini. She's pure and pristine and perfect celibate. She has come for me. She will have nothing to do with anyone else in the world." Those were the words of Bhagwan. In the Ramayana, you hear of the Agni Pariksha of Sita. To me, this seems like that sort of an Agni Pariksha that Sai Gita had to undergo so that the whole world knows who Sai Gita is and what is truly the purpose of her life.
The sad thing about English language is that it doesn't have some of the translations for Sanskrit words. A Brahmacharini is translated as a celibate. But if we go to the Sanskrit root, it means a being who is focused only on the Brahman, that is the supreme goal of one's life. We may applaud and cheer when we hear about Sai Gita's stories, but if we translate it into our lives, what does it mean to have God as the first priority? You know, we may state that we have Swami as the first priority, but in those times of financial crisis when we are struggling to have a rupee in our pocket, if Swami comes and says, "Now do you want money or do you want me?" Whom will we choose? A question to think about. And then next, suppose our friends desert us, there is misunderstanding in the family, we are left all alone, we have nobody, no friends, no family, no relatives. and we are alone in the world. And that time, if Swami comes and asks us, do you want family and relationships or do you want me? Whom will we choose? Going one step further, when we are depressed and when we lose our self-respect in society, when everybody is mocking us, when our self-respect has been shredded into pieces, at that time if Swami comes and asks, do you want your self-respect or do you want me? Whom will we choose? The glory of Sai Gita is that in any occasion, any case, whether it is food, whether it is sleep, whether it is anything, she chose Swami, Swami, and only Swami. And this is not something you have to accept because we are stating it. This is something which Swami himself said. It was during one visit. You know, whenever Swami would set out, in the later years, there was a convoy, there was a police siren, there would be sevadals running along Swami's car. But those days, there was nothing. The only way the students in the hostel would make out that Swami is coming is because Sai Gita comes running out of her enclosure. God knows how she understands, but she has that inside inner connect. It was one such day when Sai Gita came running out and all the students gathered because Swami's car slowed down and stopped and Swami got out of the car. One more thing that would often happen, those who have seen will understand, whenever Sai Gita sees Swami, she becomes so happy. And as Swami said, she is not able to express like you and me in words. The only thing that happens is water comes from her eyes and she begins urinating in excitement. And that is what exactly happened on that day. Water, tears from her eyes and Sai Gita urinating in excitement that her dear Lord, the goal of her life, that little orange form that is so close to her heart is there with her. And when this happened, being the road, you know, that urine splashed and it started falling. So all the boys took 2 steps back. But Swami continued to fondle and feed Gita, and those urine drops fell on Swami's own robe. At the end of it, you know, the statement that Swami made, so poignant, so profound, it is something that we should really mull over. Swami said, you are moving away. If you drink a cup of that urine, maybe you will get an iota of her devotion. Sai Gita's devotion is not praised by the saints, is not praised by any mortal. Swami said that this is true devotion and I wish I have a devotee like her. We have heard of pets, you know, pets being friends for humans. We have heard of pets being as stress busters. Cats are stress busters. Dog is a man's best friend. But Swami defines a best friend is he who turns you Godward. And that is what Sai Gita did throughout her life. Anybody who saw Sai Gita felt love for Swami. All her life was spent only for Swami. And whoever saw Sai Gita, fed Sai Gita, played with Sai Gita, always remembered Swami. And that is why she is no less than a great saint.
It would be quite a gross understatement to call Sai Gita a pet, though we are referring to her over and over again as Swami's pet elephant. We as students, when we used to go out to the stadium for our games, the most imposing image in front of us was that Hanuman statue which was there. And Swami would often say, I have placed that Hanuman statue right on top of that hill so that you would be inspired by his active devotion. You know, his devotion of him ready to go out and do anything for his Lord. May you all be inspired by that devotion of Hanuman. On another occasion, when Swami was talking to some students, Swami said, do you have any idea why I have placed Sai Gita right opposite the hostel? The boys were looking to Swami for an answer. Swami said, so that you all will look at her, see her every day and be inspired to love me like she loves me. That is why we are talking of Sai Gita as one amongst us, or rather we should be priding ourselves too much to be comparing ourselves with her, because her devotion was so supreme. We spoke of the occasions when Swami would go out for a drive and Sai Gita would come out, and along with all of us, she also would pine and crave for that darshan. But on one occasion, something very different happened. Swami set out for a drive. The students came out of the hostel, waiting to have a glimpse of Swami. Sai Gita too came out. But on that day, she was not that excited, happy self what she was usually known to be. Swami's car slowed down when it came near Sai Geeta's shed. Sai Geeta came out, and instead of trumpeting in joy, Sai Geeta put her trunk right on the bonnet of Swami's car and put it quite heavily, giving a strong message to Swami. And the Mahout came out. They all tried to take Sai Geeta away because she was blocking the route, but Sai Geeta would not budge. She put her trunk right on the bonnet and she would not move an inch. Finally, Swami had to open the door, come out, and then a beautiful conversation started between Sai Geeta and Swami. Sai Geeta, I have to go, give way. Geeta, I have to go, give way. And she was hushing and puffing in anger maybe, but she was not ready to remove her trunk from the bonnet. This endearing conversation happened for a couple of minutes. Then finally Swami said, okay Geeta, I am not going. And Swami turned. And the moment Swami said, okay Geeta, I am not going, she removed her trunk from the bonnet and she trumpeted and she touched Swami's feet and took Pad Namaskar. The boys were standing there, were wondering, what is happening? What is this weird interaction which is happening between this devotee and the Lord? It was then that Swami turned towards the devotees and Swami said, today, actually I was planning to go to Bangalore. Sai Geeta sensed it. That is why she has come to stop me. The boys were shocked because nobody had a clue that Swami was traveling to Bangalore that day. There was no news, there was no rumor, but Sai Geeta knew when Swami was planning to travel. And that is the connect a devotee has with her Lord. That is the devotee's connect which happens when there is absolute focus, when there is no other thought but when you're thinking only of the Lord. After Sai Geeta's passing away, after a couple of days, Swami came to the Institute auditorium. The references made to what Swami told in that discourse which he delivered then. One thing which Swami said then was very, very profound and very revealing about this devotee of the Lord. Swami said, Sai Geeta knew that I was leaving. That is why she wanted to leave before me. This Sai Geeta, whom we call the pet elephant of Swami, she not only knew when Swami was silently slipping away to Bangalore, she also knew when Swami was silently making plans to leave all of us. That was her devotion. She was not a pet elephant. She was not a devotee, but she was a saint. Because she too had a fair bit of tribulations. As it was explained, she was living here. She was the neighbor of Swami. Then she was living there, where you have the Ram Lakshman statue. Then she was shifted to Gokulam. And then she was shifted to her residence opposite the hostel. Her proximity also was drawn away from her. Her ability to see Swami every day was also drawn away from her. But her focus was always Swami. And that was what made her dear to Swami. And that was what has made us to look up to her and say, oh dear Sai Geeta, can we have one drop of that devotion which you had for us, Swami? We would be so dear to our Swami.
If Swami was always extolled as love in action, Sai Geeta was devotion in action. Among his millions of devotees across the globe, if Swami often pointed out to one particular devotee and asked his remaining devotees and students to emulate that devotee, it was Sai Geeta. On many occasions, Swami would just point at her and tell all his students and devotees, be like her. Get a little of her devotion. Such was the exemplary devotion of this elephant. I remember on that very discourse which Swami gave in the Institute auditorium, he said, if you remember the intense love that Sai Geeta has for me and develop such noble qualities, I will take you close to my heart. You need not do anything else. That was the perfection with which Sai Geeta loved Swami. Just like Lord Hanuman, who was born a mere monkey and rose to the heights of Supreme Godhead because of his devotion to Lord Sri Rama. Our beloved Sai Geeta too rose to the level of Supreme Godhead with her unsurpassed devotion. Lord Sri Krishna gave to the world Bhagavad Gita, the celestial song, by which he instilled in man the wisdom to lead a life of perpetual harmony. Our Divine Lord, too, gave us through the life and story of his instrument, our beloved Sai Gita, that wisdom to live a life of supreme love. If we ruminate over her story, we realize that she was an epitome of monumental love. And just like the various institutions which Swami has built, her love for Swami was an institution by itself, an institution of monumental love. How much ever we try to express her love for Swami in mere words, it wouldn't suffice, for her love was beyond the realms of human communication. Perhaps a visual representation of her love would be a better option. So we now have a video representation of Sai Gita's legacy. It was shown to Swami a few years ago, and Swami was very moved by it.
Satya Sai Bhagavanu Nimu Vittavamma, Satya Sai Bhagavanu Nimu Vittavamma, Nirmala Bhakti Ki Sati Leramma, Nirmala Bhakti Ki Sati Leramma, Sai Gitamma, Satya Sai Bhagavanu Nimu Vittavamma.
Thank you.
So Sai Gita's residence had to be moved from here to where the Rama statue is, and then to Gokulam, and then in front of the Satya Sai senior boys hostel. But when Bhagwan wanted to construct the indoor stadium, again there was a need to move her, because that shed had to give place to the stadium. And on that occasion, Swami called Peddareddy Garu and said, "This time we will not construct a shed. This time, oka pedda bhuvanam, a big beautiful mansion is what we have to construct. That is not all." Swami said, "It not only has to be big and beautiful, but Swami said, it has to be a permanent mansion." When Peddareddy Garu heard that word, he thought perhaps this is the last time that Sai Gita will have to move to another location. He had no clue. This happened 6 months before May 2007. And Peddareddy Garu has been there looking after Sai Gita by Bhagwan's blessings for more than 2 decades. He came to Bhagwan in the 70s. He was a postgraduate in physics. He was a faculty member in physics in the Sambalpur University in Orissa. And inspired by Bhagwan, and once Bhagwan granted him that permission, he moved to Prashantilayam and he worked in the library, he worked in the canteen, he worked in the planetarium. And when he was working in the planetarium, that was the time Bhagwan one day called him and said, "Peddareddy, why don't you also look after Sai Gita?" And that is how his journey with Sai Gita began. And for those of you who do not know, till this day, today he is sitting here, but all the years when he was looking after Sai Gita, he never entered Sai Kulwanth Hall to sit for Bhagwan's darshan. For him, that responsibility, that chance of looking after Sai Gita was so much a precious opportunity that he was there all the time, either looking after Sai Gita or on the spare time looking after the affairs in the canteen where he served as a manager for many years. Today, he is 75. His monthly expenditure is not more than 50 rupees. He cuts his own hair, washes his own clothes, and is hale, hearty, and extremely happy. I asked him, "Sir, all these years you missed so many things. You are all the time busy only looking after Sai Gita. Don't you feel that you missed something? Don't you feel that perhaps you should also go to Badrinath, Kedarnath and see something? Don't you feel that you should also perhaps experience something else in life?" He has never moved out of this Prashantinilayam from beyond the Sai Gita. Not an inch. For 40 years, his world has been Prashantinilayam, canteen and the Sai Gita shed. I asked him, "Sir, don't you think you are missing something in life?" He just laughed and said, "What is greater in life than Bhagwan? I have got Bhagwan. I have got his love. I have got the chance to serve Bhagwan's devotee. By Bhagwan's grace, let me tell you this, I have no desires today in my mind. Absolutely no desires. I am so happy. I am, if you can believe me, I am in peace. I am in absolute peace. I have no desires. I am only reveling on the beautiful moments that Swami has given me and the chance to serve his beloved devotee who has taught me so many things. I have learned devotion from Sai Gita." It's my honor to request Sri Peddareddy Garu to pay floral tributes to Bhagwan. Just like Bhagwan as Lord Krishna enacted the beautiful play with the Gopikas and Gopalas in Vrindavan, just to demonstrate to us what is divine love, to put mankind onto the path of love in the Kali Yuga. It was Sai Gita, the Lord's instrument, to demonstrate, exemplify and inspire us to walk on that path. The prema pravaham, the ceaseless flow of love of Bhagwan continues so beautifully, so fascinatingly. We will conclude today's presentation with a visual representation of this unmatched, mystifying, unsurpassable prema pravaham, the flow, divine flow of pure love of Bhagwan. After this visual representation, we will have the opportunity to listen to Bhagwan's discourse, listen to his divine voice singing a bhajan, and then we will conclude.
Thank you. పలపగలి మానవుల పైదు నీకు కడు ప్రీతి మానవుల పైదే కాదు జంతువుల మీదను గరిరాజవరద నీకు కడు ప్రీతి
చెప్పక చేయకుండా నేను కారు అటువైపు వాసన పడుతుంది ఒకే అరుస్తూ బయటకు
వచ్చేసేస్తుంది. When Swami goes in the car in the crowd, without it starts roaring and it comes out, Sri Swami.
Raja Vishwasam.
That is the faith
of Raja. Raja Balamayana Kunti Yaka Vishwasam.
Elephant's faith is extraordinarily strong.
Balamayana Kunti Telivi.
It has got a strong
Balamayana Prema.
It has got strong love.
Atu Itu Bhute Kunti Dikali.
That love which is not wavering.
Sanatsanaliki Kadine Kunti Dikali.
Love which is doesn't go on wavering and changing.
నిరంతరము మారేటువంటిది కాదు.
ఇట్ డజంట్ చేంజ్.
అట్టి తెలివితేటలు అట్టి విశ్వాసము అట్టి యొక్క గాఢమైనటువంటి యొక్క నమ్మకము ఉండినటువంటి దానికే గజముఖము అని పేరు.
గోవిందం గోవిందం భజ గోవిందం 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 భజ మూఢమతే గోవిందం గోవిందం భజ మూఢమతే సంప్రాప్తే సన్నిహితే కాలే సంప్రాప్తే సన్నిహితే కాలే నగి నగిన చతిడు
కరణే
గోవిందం భజ మూఢమతే
గోవిందం భజ మూఢమతే
జనని జఠరే శయన
పునరపి జనని జఠరే శయన
గోవిందం భజ మూఢమతే
గోవిందం భజ మూఢమతే
గోవిందం భజ మూఢమతే
గోవిందం భజ మూఢమతే
ఇహ సంసారే బహు దుఃఖారే పాహి మురారే
పారే పాహి మురారే
గోవిందం భజ మూఢమతే
Govindam bhaja moodamate.